Everyone, welcome back to But Why Though, the podcast, a podcast where every week me, Adrian, and Matt talk about the things in pop culture that the people say matter and ask the question, but why though? Before we get started, make sure you head over to all of our social medias at But Why Though PC on everything and join the conversation. On top of that, please make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you're listening. And come meet Matt and me at TwitchCon this weekend. Follow our Twitter for all those updates and make sure you enjoy the show. Welcome back to But Why Though, the podcast, and today we are talking about one of the first superheroes ever, Superman. As always, I'm your host, Kate, and I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And we have our special guest, Jared, from Podcast 2187, as well as Project Tahiti.
Hello.
Hi. Oh, damn it. I was going to say and. And then you said hi.
Oh.
You're being too nice.
My bad.
No, and we do have a special announcement to make this podcast. We are welcoming Jared and his co-host Jess to our podcast community at butwhythepodcast.com with Project Tahiti and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. You want to tell everybody about it a little bit?
Sure. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a show that Jess and I found that we talked about like all the time, even when it's in between seasons. And we ended up deciding, like, I think she hadn't been podcasting for, I guess, too long regularly, but just messaged me and was like, hey, do you want to do an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast? And and so we just go through each episode. There's a whole lot to do at this point with five seasons completed and the sixth one coming up this summer. We review each episode where we just kind of go through a synopsis, and then we have a discussions section after that. And then afterward, we have a spoiler section where we talk about things that are to come in future episodes and are up to date with everything that's happened so far in the MCU. And I also kind of talk about the comic book connections. I think Jess is only really familiar with it through the Marvel movies and through the TV series, but I grew up reading comics, ended up working in comics for about 10 years. And I have a real love for a whole lot of different characters. And I don't know, I've never been a Marvel or DC like one or the other guy when it comes to superhero stuff. And I grew up loving, I think, starting with the X-Men and Batman, but then kind of branching out in every direction in both companies. So I have a great affection for all the characters that do have connections to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And we just kind of get into the real nitty gritty of the comic book stuff and the movie connections. And we just have a really good time talking about it and enjoy reliving the old episodes.
That's awesome. Well, we're so excited to have you as a part of the family.
Well, we're excited to join you guys.
Yeah. And for you listening out there, go ahead and check out this spot and make sure you follow them on all of their stuff. Check the show notes for all those links. And here you go.
Hey there. I'm Jess.
And I'm Jared.
And we love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Do you love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. too? Or have you never seen a single episode and you want to?
Or did you start watching and you fell behind, but you heard how freaking awesome the show is lately and you just need a push to start watching again?
Well, what you could do is listen to our podcast,
Project Tahiti.
It's a magical place
where we recap each episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and discuss everything,
including the broader MCU and comics tie-ins.
So check us out on the But Why Though podcast community and everywhere you listen to podcasts.
We'll see you there.
Okay. So, like I said, the topic of this episode is Superman. So, truth, justice, and the American way. So, I was trying to figure out what's the best way to ask, because I feel like everybody knows who Superman is in some way, shape, or form in this culture that we live in. So what is your favorite Superman moment? It can be from movies, television, comics, and I guess just give a little bit of your background with the character before we go into this, because we always like to say our biases up front, right? That's kind of our shtick. So since I'm leading the episode, I'll go ahead and say my favorite Superman moment is actually in the episode for the Man Who Has Everything in the Bruce Timm's Justice League run, or Justice League series. It's one of those beautiful moments where you get to see the what it means to be Superman, which is putting all of what you want aside and like jumping yourself out of, you know, paradise, essentially, to fight bad. And like, I don't know how to explain it. It's honestly one of my favorite Superman moments out of every time I've ever seen Superman. So thank you, Bruce Timm, for that. Adrian?
So that... what you said is probably like when I think of Superman, that's the thing I think of. You know, back to our Justice League episode, like I was obsessed with the Justice League animated series. So a lot of the characters I think about stem from that. Cause I didn't really read Superman comics when I was younger or even now, because I'm not like a huge, huge fan. But if not that, I'd probably have to say, I don't know, maybe his Doomsday fight from Justice League Unlimited was pretty fun. Just because like you see him starting to open up and then Doomsday still gets him with the little shocky thing. So those are the two big moments I think about when I think about Superman, like when I'm thinking about Superman fondly.
Yeah. And I definitely agree with Adrian. I'm not a big Superman fan, if at all. Matt?
So I really don't have a favorite Superman moment. I've never really, the character obviously resonates with a lot of people, but not me. I don't really know. The only thing that when I really think about Superman, which is probably bad, and we're going to see where this goes, but I think of the Daniel Tosh stand-up where he just makes up how does Superman go faster. He's flying. Because I've never understood that concept either. But no, I understand why people love him, and I get it. I just, he's never been, and this is why we brought on our lovely guest, Jared, for Superman today. Yeah.
Because, I mean, at the end of the day, Superman is incredibly important, and we want to make sure on the podcast we're not just talking about stuff we love, but also stuff that people love. So, Jared, why don't you give us your favorite Superman moment now?
Well, my favorite Superman moment that kind of sums him up is I have less sentimental attachment to than others because it's more modern, but in Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely's All-Star Superman run, there's a really, really touching moment where he goes into a teenage girl named Reagan who's on the top of a building in Metropolis and about to jump. And he just lands next to her and talks to her about, you know, her most recent trip to the doctor and her most recent, like basically alluding to a suicide attempt without intruding or judgment, just saying like, you know, I talked to your doctor and, you know, it looks like you're going to be okay and all this, and just telling her that she's stronger than she realizes and hugging her. And there's no judgment or hate or, it's not, there's no throwing a punch. And I felt like that's like a really interesting encapsulation of who he is, because he doesn't want revenge. He doesn't do it for some weird mission of justice, even though it's in, you know, the old theme song or old radio serial and everything, you know, shtick. But at the same time, I think that he's mostly about just trying to help people and trying to do right by people and use what power he has to do right. And I think that's really a beautiful message that we could all use right now, because the world's kind of awful. Yeah. A lot of people don't think about others at all. And that basic empathy is what makes him kind of unique as a hero.
I can get behind this.
And Morrison's version of Superman in general is like really interesting. You know, he had a short lived run with the New 52, but I like that he tried to get him back to like kind of really social justice warrior roots, where, because like in Superman's first appearances, he's like fighting a crooked landlord for messing with their tenants and like telling him he's got to treat people, you know, right and with respect. Yeah. And everyone has human rights and whatnot. Like it's interesting. And just where he kind of where Superman's roots came from, how he was developed. He has kind of lofty goals and I don't know. He represents a lot and a lot of levels.
So we're going to start off with history like we always do. Jared, feel free to jump in. I've done a lot of research for this, episode, but I am in no means a Superman expert. So, okay. So Superman is a fictional superhero created by writer Jerry Siegel and artist Joe Shuster. He first appeared in Action Comics number 1, and it was published in April of 1938. Siegel and Shuster ended up meeting each other in high school in 1932 while they were in Cleveland and bonded over a mutual love of movies, pulp fiction magazines, comic strips, and science fiction. Siegel aspired to become a writer and Shuster aspired to become an illustrator, so it was kind of a match made in heaven. Siegel wrote amateur science fiction stories, which he self-published, and he did this in a fanzine called Science Fiction, The Advanced Guard of Future Civilization, because science fiction names were great back then, and I kind of want to get back to that. His friend Shuster often provided illustrations for his work in this. So the first time we actually get to see a concept of Superman comes in The Reign of Superman, and we're not talking about the Death of Superman arc, Reign of Superman. The Reign of Superman initially was published in 1933, and it's a short story by Siegel. In January of 1933, he published this in a fanzine, and he called it The Reign of Superman, and the character was a vagrant named Bill Dunn, who is tricked by an evil scientist into consuming an experimental drug. The drug gives Dunn the power of mind reading, mind control, and clairvoyance. He uses these powers maliciously for profit and amusement, but then the drug ends up wearing off, and this leaves him a powerless vagrant again. So Shuster provided these illustrations and essentially depicted Dunn as a bald man. And
why do you depict him as a bald man? Why is that significant?
It's significant because it is the complete opposite of what Superman is now, with his little, like, it's not a cowlick, but his little twirl of hair. And like Superman is known for his hair now. You got to mention that the dude is bald.
Okay, I mean, that's fine. I was just wondering why it was significant that he was.
It's like if you go bald in 5 years, you got to mention it because you got great hair. I'm just saying, but if you do. and essentially, like, he was this bald, powerless vagrant who, when he got power, he used that power for bad and for self-gain. So essentially, this is the farthest from Superman that you can get. So they keep trying to develop this Superman concept, and after some failures of, you know, other means, so they also try to do different science fiction stories, different, I don't want to call them heroes, because at this point in the 30s, the idea of a superhero hasn't been created yet. So they ended up revisiting Superman, and Siegel modified Superman's powers to actually make him even more sensational. Like Bill Dunn, the second prototype of Superman is given powers against his will by an unscrupulous scientist, but instead of psychic abilities, he acquires superhuman strength and bulletproof skin. Additionally, this new Superman was a crime-fighting hero instead of a selfish villain, because Siegel noted that comic strips with heroic protagonists tended to be more successful. In later years, Siegel once recalled that Superman wore a bat-like cape in some panels, but typically he and Shuster agreed that there was no costume for the hero yet, and there was no apparent surviving artwork from this period in Superman's history, but we see him getting closer to what he is. And all this goes to say that the character of Superman wasn't just a one and done. They didn't think him up and then he became great. Superman has a very long and failure-filled history. So after that, Siegel and Shuster showed the second concept of Superman to Consolidated Book Publishers, and they were based out of Chicago. Consolidated had published a comic book titled Detective Dan, Secret Operative 48. I love these 30s titles. It contained all original stories as opposed to reprints of newspaper strips, which was the novelty of the time. Now, Siegel and Shuster put together a comic book in similar format called Superman. Or the Superman. The is important here. Although Consolidated expressed interest, they later pulled out of the comic business altogether. So this marks the failure of the second iteration of Superman. 1934, Siegel found another partner, because all this failure eventually ends up putting a big strain on Siegel and Shuster, and they stop working together for a period of time. So Siegel finds another partner and a Chicago artist named Russell Keaton. And Keaton drew the Buck Rogers and Sky Rhodes comic strips. You probably know who, at least have heard the name Buck Rogers before. Super, super famous character. In the script that Siegel sent Keaton in June, Superman's origin story evolved even further. In the distant future, when Earth was on the verge of exploding due to giant cataclysms, the last surviving man sends his 3-year-old son back in time to the year 1935. So we're getting closer and closer to that Kryptonian origin now. So the time machine ends up appearing on a road where it is discovered by motorist Sam and Molly Kent. They leave the boy in an orphanage, but the staff struggle to control him because he has superhuman strength and impenetrable skin. The Kents adopt the boy and name him Clark and teach him that he must use his fantastic natural gifts for the benefit of humanity. In November, Siegel sent Keaton an extension of his script where it's an adventure where Superman foils a conspiracy to kidnap a star football player. The extended script mentions that Clark wears a special uniform when assuming the identity of Superman, but it's not described at all. Keaton produced 2 weeks worth of strips based off of Siegel's scripts, and in November, Keaton showed these strips to a newspaper syndicate, but they were eventually rejected and the project abandoned yet again. So we see something that is way closer to the Clark Kent that we know, similar power structure, kind of similar origin story, but he's still not good enough yet. So Siegel and Schuster find their way back together again, and they develop Superman, dropped the. They start developing that version of Superman again. The character became an alien from the planet Krypton. Schuster then designed a now familiar costume, tights with an S on his chest, over shorts, and a cape. They made Clark Kent a journalist who pretends to be timid and conceived his colleague Lois Lane, who is attracted to the bold and mighty Superman, but does not realize that he and Kent are the same person.
And this reminds me of something that I found when I was in college when I was researching their writing and the original origin of his creation as well. And it was just the woman who was the original model for Lois, it was named Joanne, and she ended up, she was around the same age as them. They were all like, I think at this point, maybe in their early 20s, late teens, yeah. Like they're still very young. And I mean, people got jobs when they were 12 and like factories back then. It was not like it is today, but yeah, they ended up falling in love, and it was like a parallel to their story in real life, because, you know, Jerry was this kind of nerdy kid who wrote sci-fi magazines and was like the editor in chief of his school paper and had a crush on the girl who was like the head cheerleader in their high school. And she didn't have any interest in him, but then in real life, he ended up finding and meeting the woman who would be the model for Lois Lane, and they fell in love and got together when he wasn't, you know, a huge success or anything. Even though Superman became huge, they never got super rich off of it. So it's kind of awesome that the timid, you know, weird newspaper guy or whatever ended up actually getting the girl in the end in real life.
It's real Superman and real Lois, or real Clark and real Lois.
Yes, he. Yeah. Definitely not Superman.
So in 1935, Siegel and Schuster finally found work with National Allied Publications. And this was a comic magazine that was publishing in New York, and it was owned by Malcolm Wheeler Nicholson. Both of the guys showed him Superman and asked him to market Superman to the newspapers on their behalf. In October of the same year, Wheeler and Nicholson offered to publish Superman in one of his own magazines. Siegel and Schuster refused his offer because he was essentially, like, Wheeler Nicholson was kind of known as this irresponsible businessman, really flipping with his money, not really knowing where money's going. And in 36, Wheeler Nicholson formed a joint corporation with Harry Donenfeld and Jack Liebowitz, called Detective Comics Inc. And this is the famous Detective Comics. And in order to release his third magazine titled Detective Comics, Siegel and Schuster ended up producing stories for that, such as Slam Bradley. Wheeler Nicholson then fell into super deep debt to Donfeld and Liebowitz, and he ended up leaving in 38. And the company was seized. In early of 37, Siegel visited Liebowitz in New York, and he then asked Siegel to produce some comics for an upcoming anthology magazine called Action Comics. Now we're getting into the familiar territory here. Superman's getting closer to being a real thing. After another failure, Liebowitz and his colleagues were impressed by the strips, and they asked Siegel and Schuster to develop the strips into 13 pages for Action Comics. Having grown tired of rejection, Siegel and Schuster accepted the offer. Now, these two ended up submitting their work in late February, and in early March, they signed a contract in which they released the copyright for Superman to Detective Comics, Inc. And this is probably, like, the worst mistake they ever could have made. They essentially gave Detective Comics all rights to their creation, which meant they pretty much saw no money at all. So kind of let that sink in. It's really sad.
We have one of these per episode. It's okay.
Yeah, we do. Oh, God, we do. Everybody makes a mistake like this.
Everybody makes horrible business decisions back then. Or really weird, shady business decisions that nobody seemed to question at the time.
Yeah.
And it all comes back to printing.
Well, and they are, like, I think that the fact that they are, like, barely adults, you know, by today's standard, I think it feels like that might have something to do with it, but it was also just the industry standard that would at the time. Like, even if somebody had been doing it for a while.
Yeah.
The idea of owning intellectual property for comics and comic strips was, like, nonsense back then.
Yeah, because back then, like, nobody saw these things as anything, really. They were stuff to entertain children.
Yep.
Which now, if you try to take somebody's design, Marvel will hunt you down and find you. Yeah, this was a normal business practice back then, and Siegel and Schuster had also given away their copyrights to previous works as well. But at this point, it's also like nobody really has the ability to see into the future of what Superman would become, because Superman is the first, debatably the first superhero. There are some things from like pulp comics and Penny Dreadfuls that some people may say are superheroes, but like the superhero as we know it is Superman. And that happens in 1938 when the first issue of Action Comics is released and Superman comes out. The magazine ended up selling extremely well, and feedback from readers showed it was because Superman. It's because essentially, and the reason I say because Superman is Action Comics 1 is actually, like I said, an anthology with multiple things inside it. We kind of talked about it a little bit in our Ditko episode, how Spider-Man would close out the Amazing series and stuff like that. Like, there is a long time in comics where they don't get their own dedicated issues, essentially. So Superman, and this is a story behind Superman that ends up getting run with, and the one we know today for the most part. Superman was born on the planet Krypton, and as a baby named Kal-El, was sent to Earth in a small spaceship by his scientist father, Jor-El, moments before Krypton was destroyed in a natural cataclysm. His ship landed in the American countryside, where he was discovered and adopted by a farming couple. They named him Clark Kent and imbued him with a strong moral compass. He developed various superhuman abilities, which he resolved to use for the benefit of humanity. Clark resides in the fictional American city of Metropolis, where he works as a journalist for the Daily Planet, a newspaper. To protect his privacy, he changes into a colorful costume and uses the alias of Superman when fighting crime. Superman's love interest is his fellow journalist, Lois Lane, and his classic arch enemy is the genius inventor Lex Luthor. And eventually, he ends up becoming one of the most well-known heroes in the DC universe, and has done so much beyond just 1938. So one of the cool things that happens, and probably one of the biggest but why those, is you actually have Superman's success branching out super early. Like, the very first superhero TV show is Superman. And hold on, I gotta get that date for that because I didn't write it down. Like, Superman has turned pretty much into, like, a one-man franchise. The first episode of The Adventures of Superman, which was the very first TV show that he had, was in 1952. And then he also had Lois and Clark. He had, there's Smallville. Now you have the show Krypton, which follows Jor-El, his dad. And you have Supergirl, which isn't technically Superman, but Superman's technically on there sometimes. And you essentially have this character that was the first superhero in 1938, have such an establishment that he is pretty much, he's been a fad, he's been a thing since the moment he came out.
Well, I think a lot of that too was the quickness with which they adapted him to the radio, because he had the radio series, I think, was in 1940 and ran for over 10 years. So, and I think that is like what just made every kid in America, even kids who didn't read comics, they all knew who he was suddenly. And
just
was like instantly a household name.
Yeah. Like, Superman's very much like like the way we think of how crazy it is that like kids today have all these heroes from like the MCU and like all that type of stuff. That was Superman, but like in the late 30s, 40s, 50s, like there were kids in Superman costumes. This is what kicks off our love of them, and it's one of the reasons why Superman ends up becoming known as the American hero. Because he was the first, and in many ways, and I would love to see this actually. No, I wouldn't. But if you watch Captain America fans and Superman's, like they usually talk around each other, but like there's like this core of both characters. But they'll usually debate each other on who's more the American hero, Superman or Captain America. And it's usually a great debate to watch happening. Just not on Twitter. So when you look at Superman as the American hero, I mean, apart from just establishing the golden age of heroes and the golden age of comics, Superman represents the middle class, ultimately, at least according to a lot of comic scholars. And initially in the beginning, as Jared kind of mentioned, he was all about stopping crime and he was all about enforcing order. And one of the very first things he does is he actually saves a woman who's getting beat by her husband. He stopped gang members, he stopped burglars, he stopped corrupt landlords. Like it wasn't Doomsday and it wasn't Darkseid, and he wasn't a god then. Like he wasn't a character that needed these overpowered inhuman monsters to fight. The original Superman was a superpowered man, but he didn't fly. He just jumped really, really high. He wasn't overpowered. And so like, I can definitely see from a personal standpoint, like a lot of my issues with Superman come because he's a damn god now. There's not much that can kill that man or really do anything. Like in a who would win fight, it's not really fun to pit anybody against Superman, right? But getting to hear a lot of his origins, ultimately, like he stands in the same way we talked about in our Captain America episode, as America moves through its periods, he stands as the protector from those problems. So eventually he does end up getting used as war propaganda, and he's called the Big Blue Boy Scout, ended up actually fighting the Nazis in the late 30s and 40s. And he was also reaction to industrialization, and specifically to the power of big businesses. So you get to see Superman taking down like these giant corporation type people. And that's one of the inspirations that ends up happening for Lex Luthor, and why the number one Superman villain like kind of hasn't changed over all these years. Like his arch nemesis is just a really smart, corrupt man when you think about it. And that's kind of the core of what Superman has gone against through the most of his career.
So how much power does he have right now?
In the 30s and 40s, I mean, not really that much. He's bulletproof. He's essentially Luke Cage.
Well, and I think even the way they describe him originally, they say nothing. They don't say he's what do they say? He's more powerful than the locomotive. It's a lot of it's the same stuff. But one of the lines it's there that isn't around anymore was nothing less than a bursting shell could pierce his skin. So like he could be hurt, but it had to be a bomb. Like somebody had to be firing a cannon at him. But that was his limit. And there was like one issue where he randomly changed his face. Like he shapeshifted. And once where he basically had the shadow's powers. They're like, he used his alien powers to cloud men's minds. But it's like they did those once and never mentioned them again. They're like, people didn't seem to like that. So
yeah, it's really weird too. Because like, I do think they slowly introduce all these other powers. Like he slowly gets more like, then X-ray vision comes out. Because people like that one. But you know why? You could market X-ray goggles to people and have them send in the backs of their comic books to buy them.
Those are cheap and easy to make out of cardboard, whereas a disguise kit is expensive. Yes. So the shape-shifting is good a gimmick.
I was just thinking of like the Superman we have today, and I'm like, oh, so he went and fought Nazis? He just didn't like win the whole war in like a day?
Yeah. Yeah, like essentially, and like, so like,
did he take a boat to get there?
So like the quote specifically comes from Mark Waid, who's probably one of the most prolific, like, men behind Superman. And essentially, like, the whole point, like, he specifically says, like, he marched with the troops. Like, when Superman in these early years is used as like a piece of the war effort, he's never shown apart from the soldiers. Like the soldiers are put on par with him, and he's never really like, he's shown being heroic, but he's heroic in like the same ways that they are, which is really interesting to see. Really similar to Captain America, in my opinion. And don't at me, Superman fans. I apologize. I'm using a frame of reference here.
I'm sure we're going to talk about it, but like, what was like the rationale to get away from that? Because that sounds like, again, you can at me, Star Wars, Superman fans. It's okay. But that sounds like that sounds like Captain America. And I like Captain America more than I like Superman because a lot of the reasons you said. So like, what was the rationale to go from that to a rock can kill you, but I could also move the earth?
I don't know if you know, Jared.
I think part of it is just the evolution with the Silver Age stuff. Like, I think it got more and more sci-fi and less mm-hmm. about that kind of social justice stuff. And it was less about him dealing with real world issues like, domestic violence and, embezzlement and corrupt politicians and landlords and then the war, which kind of consumed, I think, all of American consciousness for that whole time it was happening. And then and after that, superhero comics in general just became more fantastic and fantasy filled. And it went from a dark turn to like super optimistic because like Clark and Superman were always hopeful, but he was in a dark world to start. But then by the end, he has a cousin. Oh, guess what? Almost all of his family's alive. Really, just his parents are dead. like everyone else is fine. it just got more and more. By the time Crypto is introduced and he has a superpowered like white Labrador, essentially, it's his life's pretty rad. And it wasn't until the 80s they finally got them together. But like eventually he and Lois get together, and like one thing I like about him is that. I think Brian Bendis, who's now in charge of Superman, is like directing him currently. He once said when he was writing Daredevil and someone complained about, or a lot of people complained about like all the awful stuff that Frank Miller and Kevin Smith and then him had put him through. And he goes, well, you guys just want, superheroes to have the most boring lives. He's like, if I didn't put them through hell, then what are they going to do? Just enjoy a sandwich? He's like, no one wants to see Matt Murdock enjoying a sandwich for 22 pages. But I feel like Superman, for some reason, has been able to get away with it in a way other superheroes haven't, where tragedy isn't what defines him. Even though there is a very tragic element with the loss of Krypton, at the same time, he's not defined by that, and he does get to be happy. He does get to have Lois and eventually a kid and all this stuff. Like, he gets to be a complete person instead of just this, like, weird, morose, like...
Batman?
And every other hero...
Oh, like, here come the ats.
I love Batman, but like
you did it now.
Every other hero at this point, they try to make into Batman. Barry Allen didn't used to have a dead mom until like the early 2000s. They were fine with him just being more like Superman, where it's like he just did because he didn't do good because he has dead parents. and I feel like that's a weird fetishization of superheroes. Like they're all Batman or Luke Skywalker. They all have to have the burning parents moment, and it's really bizarre because that's even though that's a big part of Superman's origin, it's not a defining characteristic, I don't think, in his personality.
I mean, I don't think it is either, because it's actually one of the reasons why, like, I totally acknowledge the destruction of Krypton. At the same time, he had Ma and Pa Kent, who gave that child a loving home, accepted him, and encouraged him to use his power for good. That sounds like a great home life to me.
Yeah, and he didn't. And it's like it is sad. It's sad to hear about it. I'm sure it would be awful for anyone to go through it if there was anything close to it in real life. But he also never lived on Krypton, so like he has no memory of this life that he lost and of these people he lost. It's sad to know. Oh, all my biological family's gone. But like you said, like he had a pretty awesome childhood, and
it's akin to friends. Like discovering that like. I don't know. I kind of just see it as like it's almost as this moment where he finds out he has a history, and then all of a sudden we're supposed to buy into the fact that that history outweighs the good in his life. Yeah. Or matters to like that the Kent, like, cuz it matters to his character when he has to interact with those guys, like when he has to interact with Zod and the other Kryptonians. But like within on Earth, in his like what he deals with there, like he has a great life.
Though you reminded me of something I thought of before, where I once, when the movies were first starting to come out, and all my friends who'd read the Harry Potter books were suggesting, you know, that I get into them, and I read, I think, the first three before the first movie came out. It clicked that he's a reverse Superman, because yeah. He has this awful childhood taken in by awful people, and should be by all rights, he should be a crap human. Like he's only had awful examples, and he's only, you know, been treated like garbage. So like him being vindictive and resentful of being a little crap would make perfect sense. But instead he's this like noble heroic dude for no reason. And he finds out, oh, you have the secret history that's amazing and wonderful. And you know, you need to go live it and live in this amazing magical world. Whereas like Clark, it's the exact opposite. It's like you have this fantastic home life that's responsible for you being a good person. And it's like, oh, you came from amazing, fantastic, wonderful sci-fi paradise, but it's gone. It blew up. you'll never get to go there.
I think it just goes back to the boring part and things, because I just think as we move forward, there's only so many stories you can go with, and just kind of like, this is boring.
Yeah, which I mean, I definitely can see that, and it's one of the reasons I haven't really cared for Superman, because you also don't get, like, with the lack of because I do agree not every character has to be like a Batman, and I think some people very much try to over make their characters like Batman, but there's one thing that you can't say Batman has bad, and that's villains. And that's because the villains have to one up that backstory and have to one up that tragedy and that trauma. And then when you go to like Superman, it's in our current iterations, right? So like moving out of the past and moving into what people know Superman as now, he's a god. He has Darkseid and Doomsday and Apocalypse, who all essentially look the exact same. They're giant men with big muscles.
Different shades of blue.
Yeah, pretty much. And it kind of takes away a lot of that human element, which I guess is used for like the Superman mythos, right? Like he is completely set apart from humans and yet constantly trying to be human. Which is, I guess, another but why, though I didn't write it down here, but like it's something that is like kind of makes him at his core. He's a man who can turn away from humanity at any moment. And ultimately, he's a man that people are afraid will do that. But he doesn't.
And he can smell good even after being dead for like.
Oh, my God. I knew that was
nothing. Nothing stops him, not even smelling bad.
I was wondering how long we could get through this episode without a Justice League reference.
Well, I think what you're saying too, like, I think that's what makes Lex his most compelling villain, because he is just a man who is just, he has no superpowers. He's just the pinnacle of what an actual human can achieve in terms of like intelligence and success in our society. But he's also just garbage. Like he's just an awful person. And I think in a weird way, it's like, there's a lot of dichotomies. They've made them best friends, which was, I think, an awful choice.
They have a son together.
That's also Connor, and he's back now. Yeah. But he was, I think it was an awful choice in the original way they did it. But like, and I hated any reference to the Silver Age stuff with like him with his hair falling out and all that stuff. I was like, oh, so stupid. But I ended up loving it on Smallville. Like Michael Rosenbaum is like one of the best versions of Lex ever. And like, you have like Clancy Brown and Gene Hackman to go up against. And even speaking of awful human beings, Kevin Spacey did a really good job of doing the Gene Hackman version. Like, I feel like Lex Luthor's hard to mess up, but he did this amazing job of him. Like that maybe defines the character for me on screen, even though I love Gene Hackman's version at the same time. Like,
you mean it isn't Michael or Eisenberg guy?
Oh, I did not enjoy Eisenberg's performance.
No. You know why? Because they cast him as the Joker first.
Right? They did. It's so, all that stuff is so weird.
Obvious. Okay.
And that whole movie is so weird. Batman being like, just being all about vengeance and murder. like it's the opposite of Batman. Anyway.
Well, you watch the new Titans pilot. Okay. We're going to have to do a segue here. Back to the first American hero. All the way back to Nazis and stuff. Superman is actually one of the reasons Hitler bans American comics from Germany.
Well, and I love you bringing that up. They both the name Superman and the concept of the Nazi Overman were both taken from
the Ubermensch.
So that's kind of rad.
Then. Which is funny because like the creators have never once said that they drew any inspiration from the Ubermensch. Like, never once. And I think they had been asked point blank, and they were just like, no, it was just a class. It was a name.
That's interesting.
It's one of the interesting things. Because I tried really hard. I was like, they had to have been inspired by this, but no.
That is interesting. I know I had one of the old Harper Collins books about it, but it said it matter of factly. It was probably just somebody assuming, not actually basing anything. It's got to be the case.
Because I think it's really easy to make that it's the case, because essentially Superman, like, that's what the name is.
But at the same time, they were also 16-year-old kids in Cleveland. One of them had lived in Toronto as a kid.
Do you think they were reading Freud?
Right. probably not. Nietzsche and Freud, and it's like heavy stuff for little kids. and they essentially were. That's whatever.
Yeah, I mean, Superman was made in high school.
Yeah, it's awesome when you think about it.
So beyond that, in the 50s, Superman went from anti-authority to an uber cop in the post-war era. And we essentially saw ourselves as the world's peacekeepers, and we put that on Superman. And in the 60s and 70s, you ended up having stories that touched on the counterculture and young people not really having a good sense of who they were and where they came from or where they're going. And this is where you have a lot of, I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is where you get a lot of the buildup of the Krypton mythology. Mm-hmm. And then in the 80s, you have Superman fighting his own hubris and self-importance. And then you have the Man of Steel, who appeared in Frank Miller's Batman comic book series, The Dark Knight Returns, in 1986. And it was a perfect reflection of essentially Reagan politics and being a heel to the government, is how it's been described by scholars. And then in the 90s, you have Superman pitted against not only a bad mullet, those are really, really bad pictures, guys, but also really big corporations. And you end up having the rise of Lex Luthor, that redefines the cunning millionaire businessman. And we've kind of, you've talked, like, we've definitely talked about why Lex Luthor is really cool. I actually do think he's a really cool villain, but that may also have to do that my favorite moment with Lex Luthor is when he's actually Wally West and he looks at himself in the mirror and he's like, who am I? In the Justice League episode. So the next but why, though, is essentially he's an immigrant. And this is probably one of the most powerful stories that people attached to Superman and that the creators themselves lived. And this comes from Jim Lee. And if you don't know Jim Lee is probably one of the biggest, there's a lot of biggest, but he's an illustrator in comics. And he says, it was all about, can you adapt and fit into society? What's aspirational about Superman is that he is about truth, justice, and the American way. And he seeks to be a global champion. And he does this as somebody who isn't a part of American society. He does this as somebody who isn't a human. He's somebody who is constantly aspiring to be human, even though he is, for all intents and purposes, better than a human, using quotes there. But he never sees himself as human. And then from Scott Snyder, also super big name, his story is the story that all of us share in one way or another, depending on how far back you go in our genealogy. What also makes him quintessentially American is he's a superhero who looks out for us all. You always get the sense that Superman is protecting everyone and he sees everyone as equals. And you end up, and this is, I mean, Superman as an immigrant story is probably just really, really central, to the world right now. And I think that that's one of the reasons why a lot of people have been coming back to Superman. I believe Superman comics have actually had an uptick and stuff like that, is because ultimately he's a guy from outer space who comes down and makes a life because he left his planet because it was going to explode. And it's, while it's an analog for an immigrant story, and it's been treated as such by almost every single writer, and especially his creators who were Jewish themselves. So at the time it was really, really big.
Yeah, and another aspect I think about the immigrant story that I've kind of recently been thinking about in a different lens was, he has this story of being sent on a rocket ship as a little kid or as an infant in every version of his story, except for in, I think, was it 1986 or 1987, after the Crisis on Infinite Earth story, when DC reset its continuity for the first time, which they would then end up doing again in 1994 with Zero Hour. And then since 2000, they've done it three or four times. Like, they just keep,
I'm pretty sure it's four times.
Keep doing it. It's really weird how often they do it now. Like, they, just, as time goes on, they're eventually just going to reset every year. Because it gets exponentially shorter between each time. But at the time, they made Krypton. I really do enjoy things about that aspect of Krypton that made it into the Superman animated series and in Justice League, some of the like technological aspects. But the idea was that it was this really cold scientific society, and it was separate and wasn't really in touch with its own humanity anymore. And Jor-El, his father, was like a real rebel in that sense, because he actually wanted to meet his assigned mate from there, you know, like Matrix-like society, like everything's computer-derived according to algorithms. Like, he wanted to meet her, Lara, in person, and it was unheard of because they were all their children were conceived with artificial insemination and then birthed not in a womb, but in a birthing matrix, and like these oval-shaped black eggs, essentially. And Superman was no different. And in fact, he was not yet born, was still a developing fetus, that he just stuck this gestation chamber on a rocket, like it had nothing surrounding it. It was a like, if you look up the picture, it's like this orange rocket. It's like just the bottom part of a rocket and like four arms that clamp on to this egg and then just shoot it into space. And so he's actually born when the egg opens on Earth. And I think the rumor at the time, or that I, a few years later when I was first reading comics as a very young child, was that either John Byrne, who wrote the story, or Mike Carlin, who's the editor of Superman comics for like 20 something years, that one of them had an idea in their head that with this reset, they could make it to where Superman could run for president by making him born in America. Yeah. And in retrospect, it's like everyone involved in his creation, all the guys who started the original golden age of superhero comics were all either immigrants themselves or the sons and daughters of immigrants. And like that, like, I feel like it's really screwed up in a way that John Byrne took that away. I don't think it was something he probably did intentionally, but it could have been subconsciously like xenophobic. I mean, yeah. Again, I don't know. He's what, a Canadian immigrant to America, and his parents were British. So you'd think maybe he wouldn't be down on an immigration, but then again, it's white immigrants moving from England to Canada and into America. It's not, it's not the most marginalized population.
Yeah. Because it sounds like too, like he could have like, and if it is, and if it isn't, like if it came out just like maybe subconsciously, or like he could have just like, what can make my Superman different?
Yeah,
he's very well not could've. Immigrant. No, he's American and he can be president. Because has at the time that this happened, has Lex been president yet, or does that come later?
That came in the 90s, I believe.
90s, right? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely later. It was either the 90s or the early 2000s. But I remember that run was Jeff Loeb and Ed McGuinness, I think.
Now, Lex becoming president.
Couldn't
is
you
great.
Just say that he could become president anyways? Because nobody actually is supposed to know that he's an alien.
Yeah,
that's also true. They fake his identity. Like, yeah, he's not from Paraguay or whatever. Like,
that's what I understand. Like, the whole thing, what you're going into, I was like,
Ma and Pa Kent went to a good papers maker and got him his papers.
Yeah.
Well, even in that story, they fake it because they have him where he's what? I think it was right before a historic blizzard. So that's the reason why they're like, oh, no one ever knew she was pregnant, because there was this really long blizzard that happened right after they found
her. I love comic book logic.
So does that make Lex Luthor like a birther in that situation?
Oh, man. I really wish someone would make this story now.
Too real. No, too Way real. I don't need that realness anymore.
And it's one of those things, like, and it is one of the things that I've always known about, because like I've read a little bit of Red Sun, because Alex, who, you know, friend of the podcast, you've had him on the podcast quite a bit, he recommended reading Red Sun. He said it's his favorite Superman run. It's an Elseworlds, essentially. He's, instead of falling down in the US, he falls down in communist Soviet Union, and you see what happens to him if he has that influence. And I didn't finish it, sorry Alex, but like, there are all of, like, the one thing that I've always known about Superman, even without reading it, and I guess just watching the Dean Cain show, that was my shit when I was little.
I loved that show as a kid. I felt like I was so the good. Only one.
So good. Thank you, TNT. But I always knew he was an immigrant, and I always knew that he, like, the conversation around him was always him being a powerful message for immigrants, and the fact that you don't have to be born here to be American.
Well, and that reminds me of one thing, mentioning both the immigrant status and specifically Lois and Clark, but it's something that only I think I knew at the time, as friends have pointed out, like they don't know it now, much less before the internet was what it is. But because I was obsessed with this stuff, and I have OCD and it can definitely channel that compulsion into my interests. And when, as a kid, I remember getting like the TV Guide magazines about them and reading all about Terry Hatcher and Dean Cain. Yeah. I was like, he was a football player, but he injured his knee. And so I knew that his dad is a Japanese American, is a Japanese immigrant. Yeah.
I didn't know that. So I actually did not know that about Dean Cain.
Yeah. So Dean Cain is a biracial man of color and a Japanese American man. And that was Superman for years. And like every time people get pissed off about a colorblind casting where they make a white character a person of color, and today I get really frustrated because I'm like, Eartha Kitt, okay, Linda Carter, and Dean Cain. We had a black, a Latina, and a Japanese American. Catwoman, Wonder Woman, and Superman are the most famous ones, like from when I was a kid. So I don't understand. I don't understand why anyone could have any problem with this. And like, yeah, Linda Carter, you know, has a white dad.
Yeah. but she is white passing. Yeah.
Yeah, and she didn't change her name. She didn't say she wasn't from Tucson. You know, some people do change their names either because society sucks or whatever. But yeah, at the same time, like, I don't think she hid her identity. And like, and Eartha Kitt certainly didn't. And Dean Cain ended up, I think, taking his stepfather's name. So
yeah, ultimately just end up like, you can't really fault actors for that because like,
oh, not in any way.
In a society and it's happened with Chloe Bennett. Like, I know that she's gotten a lot of stuff for that. Oscar Isaac's gotten stuff as well. But it's kind of like, at the end, you have to get work. And a lot of that involves making sure you can get in the room.
For sure. One of my favorite actors is James Rhode. And like, I'm really excited. Yeah. This year is the first time I think I've ever seen him playing a Mexican-American man. But I know that I read like interviews where he changed his name from Rodriguez, even though he grew up in Texas with a Mexican-American family.
I had no idea about that until I read like 25 people you didn't know were Latino article.
Well, and it was like the article or interview I remember reading like years ago was so depressing because it was like, oh no, when I got started in the early 90s, when I was in my 20s, like people told me there was no way I would ever get hired. Like, I had to change my name. And it's like, that's so depressing.
And then he led Psych for what? Eight seasons?
Yeah, 8 years.
8 years, right? Yeah.
But then he broke up with What's-Her-Name. And they were so great together.
They got back together with the movie, though. I don't know if they're still back together. But they got back together in real life.
I don't think they're back together in real life anymore. I checked.
Oh,
so sad.
That's like Chris Evans and Jenny Slate. They keep breaking up and they get back together and breaking up again. And
I just don't know who would break up
on screen, which went so well with like their real life. So it was
You know who Superman didn't break up with? America.
That makes me feel like they need to keep Psych on the air forever because they got back together when they made the movie and they broke up again. It's like, just when they're working together, clearly they love each other.
Exactly. Just get out of
the same room, people. It's a weird...
Now, if they got back together since I've last checked, then I'll be happy. But last I checked, I think about maybe a little under a year ago, they were
still. So for Psych, the movie too.
Well, let's bring them back. I would like them to do another movie anyway. But
yes, especially, I love Psych.
It makes people happy.
Oh, yeah, I actually didn't know that about Dean Cain.
Yes, but anyways, we need to get back to Superman.
Yes,
Dean Cain. I tried to do that. Then he wanted to talk about Psych more, Matthew.
I didn't say anything the whole time.
Did you just call him Matthew?
Yes, because I'm upset that you want to get us back on track after you kept talking about Psych after I tried to get us back on track. But now I'm mad.
I felt that you were ignored, so I wanted to help you out.
Thanks, buddy.
So, going back to Superman, the next But Why, though, and it is probably one of the biggest things we know Superman for, is his moral compass. Essentially, his moral compass is that he will always do what's right, and he will always fight on the side of humanity at the end of the day. Now, one of the things behind this means that he will never kill. However, I did do some research and he has killed people before, guys.
They've all killed a lot of people.
Well, Superman has actually killed the least amount of people.
Okay, put it this way. It depends on how much you're counting physics at this point.
Well,
the chest, you're going to break
as the ribs, Kevin Conroy said at the panel at Wizard World Austin, So long as they make a grunt while they're falling to the death, they're not dead in TV, and you can show it in a kid show. That is what Kevin Conroy said, which is why if you watch Batman the Animated Series, when he throws people off planes, you hear them going, "Ugh!" It has to show that they lived.
It's when they land, by the way.
Okay, when they land. Yeah. Anyway, okay. But he has killed people. He has killed really the same people multiple times, or he's done it while being controlled, or he's done it in an Elseworld. So he's done it where he isn't Clark Kent proper. He isn't Superman proper. So I try to kind of weed that out and put it into actual stuff. So he has killed Zod in the comics. However, it was an alternate pocket dimension thing, I believe. One of the times he killed Zod.
The first time was a John Byrne story. I remember that one really clearly. And it was an alternate pocket dimension version so they could keep the Legion of Superheroes around. Because they, when they reset everything, they were like, well, we can't reset Legion or it doesn't make any sense. So they still had their history with Superboy, even though Superboy had never existed. And so there's this stupid convoluted thing. It's where the really, really weird Supergirl, who I love and is an amazingly well done comic series, but like it's the most comic book sounding thing in the world. She's a shape changing protoplasmic being from this alternate pocket dimension who took the form of Supergirl and became Superman's adoptive cousin. But she ended up merging with a human girl named Linda Danvers, and the merging of the two souls and the sacrifice that she willingly gave made them become a new gestalt being, this one creature that was an angel, I think that is an avatar of fire on Earth. And it's so convoluted and weird and bizarre, but it was a lot of fun. I kind of
like that better than like the actual Supergirl stuff.
I was really mad when they brought when they brought the pre-crisis Supergirl back, when they brought the cousin back. I'm like, she's just his cousin. that's not an origin story. It's like, oh, that's my cousin. Like, that's like a 2-second thing.
Whereas, yeah. a protoplasmic being who gains.
Well, and she was she dated Lex Luthor for a long time when Lex had he didn't fake his death. He got cancer because he wore a kryptonite ring to really mess with Superman and get in his head. He wore a kryptonite ring all the time and ended up, first he got a robot hand because of it, because he gave himself cancer, and then he ended up dying. And he had his consciousness transferred to a cloned body.
Oh, so, that's right.
So at the time but he was also like, genetically engineered. So he was tall and buff and had long, curly red hair and an Abe Lincoln beard. And he was Lex Luthor II. He created a fake identity of a long lost son from an affair. But he dated Supergirl for a long time. And Supergirl was constantly arguing with Superman, where she's like, no, you just don't get Lex. Like, he's not really that bad. He's not like his dad. He's just like, I think he is his dad. because it's comics, of course. No one believed him, even though they all have encountered, even though she's a protoplasmic being from another dimension. She's like, I find that very hard, far-fetched. I don't think he's his dad. But
I mean, it has to lead to like ultimately the biggest question in comics is like, what have these people been smoking for a lot of these writing sessions?
Oh, for sure. I think a lot of creatives, there's always the jokes about like poets on payday, you know, whatnot. A lot of creatives drink a lot. creatives use mind-altering substances.
I mean, if you look at the Silver Age. he does kill Zod. He kills Zod and other Kryptonians with kryptonite. But because it does happen in this altered continuity or this different continuity in a pocket dimension, like he kills Zod in different times too, but there's always like an explanation for it. That's one of the reasons why you end up having this huge controversy in Man of Steel, because right there, you get the biggest moment of that movie is when Henry Cavill Superman just breaks Zod's neck. And like it is highlighted, it is there. There's like that gif of Zack Snyder like smiling when he like fake does it to show Cavill what to do. But like it was probably one of the most frowned upon moments in a movie, in a comic book movie ever, from the fan base.
I think that for me too, the part that makes it messed up, even though like one of my first Superman comics I read, the one you were just talking about where he kills Zod and Nod and and Feora, I think, his two partners from the comics, who are different from the ones in cartoons and movies for whatever reason. But I think that it was something like he exiled himself. It was the first time like he had a beard. He ended up, that's when he met the character Mongol for the first time and ended up in his gladiatorial arena in space. Like he left Earth for like a year in real time in the comics because he was like, I just took lives. Like I have to really think about this. Yeah. It's not me. And it weighed on him for the rest until they reset continuity in like completely in like 2001 or whatever. It resonated for the character for like another 17 years or 15 years. And I think that it's something that was really important to him. And then Zack Snyder's like, oh, he killed a guy, but for real, the real Superman did. And like, he just shoved it in that movie. Like it's like, it's his first adventure and he's already murdering people. It's hard for it to be like this big dramatic story where he's breaking character and doing something. It loses its gravitas when it's his first mission, because it was him breaking his vow and him doing something that was really hard for him to do, but it was the only way to save Earth from like total destruction. But even for him, that was really hard to do, to kill one person to save everybody else. And I think that loses meaning when it's his first go out, you know, it's like, but at the same time, it's hard to argue it completely because he's done it like five times. Like he just keeps killing Zod. Every time he does it for real, it's Zod. He always kills Zod. Yes.
And that's one of the things, and it's really hard, but I definitely agree with you. I think the reason that like people were mad about it was because of the way Zack Snyder did it. Not necessarily the act itself, but the way he did it. And I think ultimately, like when you have it, I've always seen Superman as a guy who won't kill, because like some of my favorite interactions is where Wonder Woman is like, yeah, I wouldn't have dealt with that because I would have taken care of my villain. Like that, like those types of interactions have like defined both those characters for me.
And I like that it's like something that's weirdly links him and Batman, you know, because they both like value life so much. They have completely different methodologies. They have different personalities. They look at humanity and people in totally different ways, but they both really want to save people and they want to protect all life, even people who would kill them.
Yeah. It's why the Joker keeps messing up Gotham.
Also true.
Which, going to the Joker, he has also been killed by Superman. So in the Injustice Gods Among Us run leading up to the video game, it's a comic book tie into the video game, The Fighter, the Joker ends up kidnapping a pregnant Lois Lane and using Scarecrow, the Scarecrow gas, to convince Superman that it's Doomsday. And so Superman rushes in thinking Lois Lane is on the table about to be operated on, and grabs Doomsday and shoots him up to the sky when he's far, and you have Batman in his ear telling him, dude, that's not Doomsday, stop doing that. And by the time it wears off and he realizes that it's not Doomsday, it's too late and Lois is dead. And they're flying up in the air and it's like, holy shit, you just made me kill Lois. And so technically he's killed Lois too, but that wasn't really in his right mind. Again, one of those things. But he ends up flying back down and he punches a hole in the Joker's chest, to your "if Superman punches you" comment.
Yes.
And it's really brutal. Like, I will include that panel in the show notes. It's a brutal panel. Like, it is, you know, in vampire movies where they have the vampire put their hand in their chest and pull hearts out? That's what that is. He, of course, has killed Doomsday, which I don't know if that counts, because a lot of the times people say that, like, essentially Superman just doesn't kill humans or, like, Kryptonians or, like, humanoids. So, like, anything that has that, like, value of life, really.
Well, and originally Doomsday was, like, a mindless monster. Yes. He had no personality or history. He was just a murderous
destroy. Yeah, that's it.
All he was.
Yeah. And so he kills Doomsday. I put this in for you, Matt. He's killed Green Arrow twice.
Yes.
One of them was because Green Arrow accidentally injured Pa Kent. Also in the Injustice run.
Injured, but he killed him. That's so extreme.
So that means you need to take your head off.
That also reminds me of in like the classic Alex Ross, Mark Waid, Elseworlds, Kingdom Come, Joker kills Lois, and Superman, I think he contemplates doing it, but the extreme young guy kind of based on Cable, and he looks basically just like Cable, but he's shirtless and has giant horns as well, Magog, murdered him like before Superman could even really evaluate it. Like while he's being taken into custody, he like just murders Joker in front of everybody. And it's like, why didn't you guys do this earlier? but and then he goes into exile for years afterward, just like for even letting it happen. Like he's so anti-murder, like the dude who murdered his wife. He's like, well, I got to give up being a superhero now. Cause I let the guy who murdered my wife get killed on my watch. It's like, he's such a martyr. And so, yes. Like, so anti-murder.
And so essentially with the moral compass, it's easy to do that when you're a god, right? Like it's easy to have a great moral compass when nothing can really hurt you. But ultimately, and you brought this up, the Grant Morrison and Quietly Young run, and you've already described that panel where he, you know, essentially talks somebody off the ledge. It was done, and it's done to one of these ways to show that his moral compass doesn't just expand to Doomsday or Zod, but it also expands in those little moments where he doesn't need his heat vision, where he doesn't need to fly, where he doesn't need to do any of that, and to show that like his moral compass is even in those small moments. Now, ultimately, the biggest test of his moral compass is in the death of Superman, which is both loved and not loved at the same time in certain circles. So in the years since its release, The Death of Superman has kind of been dismissed as a publicity stunt. That being said, people still loved it. And it's still probably one of the best written, like, arcs, layouts of a Superman story.
Between that and the death of and the follow-up, The Return, like, they had it plotted out. They had four simultaneous books running, and then I think a couple other things would come in to fill in the fifth weeks.
Yeah.
But they basically, Superman was basically a weekly series. They even had little triangles on the front that said what week it was in the month. So what week it was in the year. So it went through 1 through 52 with a little triangle. It said 1993, you know, one, and you knew your reading order because it wasn't the first issue of Action Comics, or whatever issue came out in January, and then the next issue, it was whatever came out the next week, and you followed it.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that piece.
It was really cool. And the stories were taking place concurrently when they were about different characters. It was really interesting.
That's awesome, and it sounds like a better way than like the 10-part Marvel events that happen, and you have no idea what to do in that reading order.
Well, and I don't want to like be too crass because I love it, but I was 11. And I literally had a white T-shirt that had a picture of the funeral procession drawn by John Bognado, yeah. It had all the DC characters like being his pallbearers and all these people crying, like Mom, Pa Kent, and Lois in the background. On the back, it said, "Where were you when Superman died?" And had the date that it was released. Like they had that stuff ready to go, like printed out in kids through, you know, double XL sizes. So it was definitely a crash.
It was a little bit of a publicity stunt. And it's also one of those moments, like comic book deaths haven't been like solid up until here. Like Superman didn't make the temporary death, but he was such a big character dying that it was like, this is kind of cheap. That being said, it is still a really great arc. And essentially in The Death of Superman, So it began in 1992 and it lasted until 1993, and it was published in Superman, in The Adventures of Superman, Superman, The Man of Steel, Justice League America, and Green Lantern. So it was this big crossover event. And since initial publications, it's been reprinted into different formats and editions, and it's broken down into three different arcs within the giant Death of Superman arc. And the first is Doomsday, which chronicles Superman's deadly fight with the bloodthirsty monster, and it concludes with his death. The second is Funeral for a Friend, which depicts Superman's fellow superheroes and the rest of the world mourning his death, as well as Pa Kent's heart attack. And then the final part is Reign of the Supermen, which sees the emergence of four individuals claiming to be Superman and the original Superman's return as well. And so it's this long, like, kind of progression that highlights the character. But the biggest part here is that in Death of Superman, you really see, like, they die by essentially breaking each other's necks by punching each other. Like, yes, he wins because he broke Doomsday's neck by punching him, but he had to get close enough to take that hit himself.
And he like he fought him to a standstill like after he took out the Justice League for like for like 2 months across four comic books. Like every issue was just him them like fighting through Metropolis, destroying stuff, knocking stuff down. And in fact, the way they explained Clark Kent surviving and him not was using the shape changing Supergirl, because when Superman was dead, they made it clear that they weren't the same person by later on by having him come out of rubble, like from the ruins of the Doomsday Massacre through Metropolis, and he been a survivor, and he was like, oh, I was down in there and you know in the dark, and I lived on water or whatever for whatever weeks, but. I love that arc because it introduced Superboy and Steel and Eradicator and the Cyborg Superman villain who had already been sort of introduced as a Fantastic Four parody or like not really parody, but like homage.
Is that the Shaq character?
Yes, Shaq did play Steel. Although
that was awful.
Although they removed all the connections to Superman.
Yeah,
it's just not a good movie, but it's the inferior Shaq movie, Shaq Kids movie. The superior one is definitely Kazam, where he's the genie. That one's excellent, in a way. But no, Steel is a great character, and Steel and Superboy still. You'd said he and Lex have a son together. They're
Superboy.
They're around, although Connor Kent has had a couple times that he's been taken off the board for whatever reason. People at DC have been like, oh, let's not use him for a while. And
he's back now, though, in his like original 90s getup, which is awesome because it's the best costume in existence.
And what I love most about it is what was at the time like a New Kids on the Block-esque fade now could easily just be converted into like a really harsh undercut. And like it's cool. It's not just cool again. It's cooler than it was by the time they got to it. Because that was like a 1991, like 1990 look that a bunch of middle-aged, you know, white dudes writing and drawing comic books in the early 90s were like,
you know what, Tim?
What do kids look like? Oh, my daughter has this poster from 3 years ago. I'll use that. But but now he looks awesome. And I'm really glad that he's back. And Steel is great. Eradicator is an interesting character that like is tied to Superman's that kind of super alien version of Krypton, the less human version in his Kryptonian history. And Cyborg Superman's a great villain.
And that's one of those things that like it pops up in lists of like people Superman's killed, but I'm like, Cyborg Superman's not a person. It's a cyborg.
Yeah, no, he's
I don't think that counts.
He's a disembodied consciousness that cannot be killed. He could he was there around
the human cyborg thing, whether it's good or bad.
Whatever, Matt, you could go listen to our Patreon episode of Ex Machina, and Matt talks like says they're robots.
He was a Mr. Fantastic because there was a Dan Jurgens story earlier on in the post-crisis Superman history, like a couple of years before the death of Superman, that introduced him. His name is Hank Henshaw, and he was a brilliant astronaut whose family all got superpowers, but eventually all their powers killed them each.
Yeah.
And he was trapped inside of computers, like is basically his consciousness. And eventually he got a hold of the birthing matrix that I was talking about before, the black space egg that Superman was born out of, which he was artificially inseminated from this technological society. Guess what? There's a bunch of other Superman genetic information in that egg. So he just cloned himself a body and then made the rest cybernetic so he could control it by controlling technology.
So Ultron.
Yeah, so Ultron with Superman's actual DNA.
Yes.
And so he passed a DNA test, which is also really weird, really weirdly relevant. And now he's like, now they're all like really important parts of Superman's mythos and legacy, and they added to it. Yeah. And I like it, like, because they added a version of Superboy that was a unique character, because before that it was just Superman when he was a boy. There was a Superman TV show or Superboy TV show that was syndicated.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, in the 80s. If you look it up, they went to I think maybe Siegel University in a fictitious place in Florida. It was him going to college in Florida.
Holy crap, it's super weird.
But you guys should look that up. It's really bizarre. It's super cheesy special effects. But that was one of my like that and the reruns of the George Reeves TV show on Nick at Night were like my first exposure to him other than movies.
That's cool.
No, it's really, that was predated Lois and Clark. It was really bizarre, but
And like the last piece to Superman's moral compass is ultimately Lois Lane. And it's, I did quite a bit of research on this because Lois Lane, like, actually had, there's a young adult series about Lois Lane right now and stuff, in the same vein that like, Gordon has gotten his due. So perhaps she's probably one of the best known female characters, like outside of like Wonder Woman and stuff. And without Lois as a supporting character, you end up with Superman who has, who doesn't have that grounding piece. Like Lois grounds Superman, and she's essentially just like Commissioner Gordon is for Batman. And she's the one that keeps him grounded. She's the normal human who essentially gives the audience this look into Superman because she shows it from the street view. And she, through her, we get to see the story through the good and the bad. And she's brave and she's intelligent and she's almost always in over her head, but she loves her job and she has her job. And that's all that matters.
I don't care for Lois Lane at all. And one, the fact you bring up intelligent, I know they eventually get it, but I still don't understand how you work with somebody and he takes off some glasses and you cannot recognize him.
They're special glasses, Matt.
Well, and there was this interesting thing that like the headline was deceptive, but it was based, I can't remember what university it was, but I remember reading about it in I think high school in some article, and it was a university study that showed that people, especially when they're attracted to people, look directly in their eyes, and if the glasses are thick enough that you can actually, it will change the shape of your eye, the way your eyes appear. So it's, it is conceivable that someone could see someone every day if they were intensely attracted to both Lois or to both Clark and Superman. You would just look directly in their eyes both times, which tracks with the character. But for that to work, every other person in the DC universe has to
be very attracted to both Superman.
Not just Superman, but also anyone who knows Clark has to want to bone him. So it's like, it's kind of weird to think about that way. It's like,
I was waiting for the extra things. I was like, my wife wears very thick glasses. And she took them off and was like, oh, I'm a different person. I'd be like,
being said, people do look different in, like, some people look very different in glasses than they do without glasses.
But we're talking about somebody who goes from like, hey Clark, I'm going to see the story, to like 10 minutes later, hey Superman, how are you doing?
And the thing is,
yeah, and like, also
he's jacked as shit. Like, there's not that many jacked like people in that world.
He doesn't mess up his hairdo either, so the hair is about the same. At least he, like, if he wore a wig or something.
Yeah.
There are some iterations of Lois Lane I don't mind, but for the most part, I don't really care for Lois
Lane. I actually really like Lois.
I don't care for Lois Lane. Out of all the supporting characters, I know she's the most like well known, but like I don't really care for her.
So I care for Lois in the way that like when it comes to supporting female characters, Lois is amazing. Like other women in comic books who get put as the girlfriend character, like they are not anywhere near as competent as her, because there are a lot of times where Lois actually gets herself out of situations. Like, she's able to think on her feet and be in the thick of it and deal with it. Like, she isn't super powered, but, like, she is able to be that human lens for Superman when he's losing sight. And it's also one of the reasons why, one, I really hate what they've done with Iris West in The Flash.
I'm glad we were going to bring that up, because I can't stand Iris West.
Yeah, because Iris West was a woman who put her work above stuff. And she was a journalist, and she was this in the Flash TV series on CW.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have that anymore. She abandoned it to be the leader of Team Flash. And I'm like, one, you don't know how to lead a team. What qualifications do you have? You became
de facto leader for no reason.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. And for me, they're pulling away like this important core of what I see, like these like the girlfriend types, right?
Well, in the comic thing books. Was before this, though, they've almost made her in Lois Lane, because at least from my memory,
yeah.
I don't know if Iris West ever did anything.
No, she wasn't really.
And so if anything, they've just like made Iris West into Lois.
Well, Lane, and that's
she was always a reporter, and I think that's something that you were talking about, Superman being the model for superheroes.
Yeah, right.
In the exact same way, Lois is the model for superhero, you know, girlfriends.
Right. Yeah,
but like Iris, and then later Wally's long-term girlfriend and later wife, Linda Park, she ends up becoming a doctor because a writer was like, everyone's girlfriend or wife is a reporter. Writer. She was a reporter. and like, it's every one of them, like just about, has at least at some point dated a reporter or a photographer. Like Vicki Vale.
Yes, Vicki Vale.
To be fair, it is by proximity, because usually if you are covering superheroes, you're more likely to be
around superheroes.
Unless you're Peter Parker, and then you just cover yourself.
Well, and but they did have him, though. He dated Betty Brant briefly, right, yeah. Although she was, what, the secretary, not a reporter. Well, but he does date other reporters off and on before he settled down with Mary Jane for until the devil got involved. Weird stuff. But
he killed her in that rain?
Oh, that feels like a parody of The Dark Knight Returns to me. But like, it's so silly. It's beautifully drawn, but really weird. Really weird. But I do know what you're talking about. The radioactive sperm poisoning. Yeah,
it's awful.
It's so stupid. But no, it's something that I think Lois kind of did set that standard. And you're absolutely right. Like, they nailed it with the reporter job being like making a lot of sense, even if the hero isn't a reporter, for him to have them to have close proximity. Like, there is a reason why it stuck so well. But she was the one who set the model for it.
Yeah.
Just the same.
Yeah. No, I definitely see that. And I think that's one of the reasons that I get kind of upset, because like, you do end up like with that girlfriend trope in comics. You end up with fridging that comes up a lot of the time. And like, ultimately, like, yeah, it happens to Lois every now and then, but she's highly freaking competent. And like, it doesn't happen a lot of the time to her.
Well, and Alex, the girl who was the first character fridged.
Yep.
Like the coined the term.
Girlfriend.
Yeah, he was a photographer. they're all journalists. It's so stupid. And you said about her being competent, like past the 50s, like there was very little damsel in distress stuff.
Oh,
she usually took care of herself.
Exactly. Like she was hunting down a story and Superman happened to be there. Like she was her in to get that story, which was one of the things that was really cool to see. Like in the same way that like Jim Gordon can take care of himself a lot better because he's Jim Gordon. But like in that same vein, like it was somebody who was there, who was in love with Superman, but wasn't the damsel. And that was really cool. And I think that that's one of the things that's kind of bugged me. And I don't think that they've transitioned well on the Flash TV show for Iris and losing that core of what that character is, like having her have her own story outside of the character.
I completely agree.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
It's upsetting because even though they did have a little more, I think more than the comics had for years in Lois and Clark, you know, like it felt like every third episode she would be like squealing as she's falling and he'd save her. But in the same episode, she was going out and taking initiative. She was doing stuff having nothing to do with him, and their plots were interweaving because she was an investigative journalist and had like a very strong, you know, sense of moral duty to help people as well. And I think that like she, even though she was more of a damsel, I think more frequently than Iris is, she was also more independent, more well-defined, and like, and more of an active hero on her, in her own right, which considering she runs the hero team Flash, like that's kind of depressing to think that like Terry Hatcher occasionally falling off a building squealing was more of a badass lady reporter, because that's not fair, you know, to what's called Candace Patton. Like, she is capable. Like, there's no reason they couldn't write her better.
Exactly. And that's a whole nother conversation. That's my biggest problem with a lot of the women on DC TV. People are like, but love them. And I'm like, no, they're written badly.
They're props for the men.
Yeah, give them good writers. That's all it takes. Like, you don't need, not everybody needs to be on Team Flash. And whole nother conversation. But yeah.
I have a lot of thoughts about that stuff for sure. I think we all do. Yikes.
Oh, yeah.
I will say this, like I said, as much as I'm not a big fan of Lois and what they've done, they do have some, like you guys have said, some pretty good iterations of her. And they also have some other ones that are kind of like, really? But the biggest problem I have, like I said, you work with somebody, obviously they have the ones where they get together, but before then you're like, you have no idea who this person is.
Like, really. We both wear glasses, so.
And I wear glasses not that much of the time, a lot of times. And you tell me if I just take them off from around the corner, you're going to lose me in the crowd?
Yes.
Okay.
But like when it comes down to it, and looking at this, the reason I have it in there is because she is one of those, but why those for Superman? She is, like you said, the prototypical, like she's the superhero girlfriend. But she's also a lot more. And Greg Rucka has like a really good quote about her. And he said, I think Lois is amazing. And it comes down to portrayal. She's the woman that Superman falls in love with. Think about who that woman has to be. It's not the most beautiful person in the world, but that's somebody who can go shake his view. And once again, I have to quote Wade, and surprise Superman. This is a man who can fly around the planet. And for Lois to do or say something that sets him on his ear. This is a guy who's seen wonders we'll never see, and Lois to him is one of those wonders. The biggest thing that gets to me, and one of the reasons that Lois gets tarred with the bitch appellation, is that we assume rightly that Clark would be attracted to a woman who is strong, passionate, and capable. But those very positive traits can be portrayed, if you're not careful, as very negative things, especially when issues of gender get involved. It's very easy to go from strong and outspoken woman to bitch. A lot of that's societal. There's sexism involved that allows that kind of self-confidence be read as arrogance. Consequently, that's one of the landmines you have to dodge when you work with Lois, but I don't mind that. She fascinates me. I actually think that one of the reasons that Lois is there, one of the secret brilliances of Siegel and Schuster's work, whether or not it was intentional, is that we see not only as a love interest for Clark, but through Lois, we see the wonder of Superman. It's easy to take for granted that bullets bounce off Superman. When Lois sees this as a reporter, she says, wow, bullets bouncing off him. And I think that's a really good quote, because like I think a lot of the times like Lois just gets pushed to the side, but there's so much in her. Like Superman is a god, and yet Lois makes him quake in his boots. That's the Lois but why though. And I mean, that's pretty much all I have. He's been in a whole bunch of movies. Christopher Reeve has played him. Brandon Routh has played him, who now plays Adam in Legends of Tomorrow. Henry Cavill, who after Mission Impossible Fallout, I think needs to be everything. He deserved better writers.
He got robbed.
He could have been a good Superman for sure.
That was probably the only part.
But he smells good.
He's probably the only person that I've cared about. And I don't even like really Superman, as I've explained, but he's the only person that I actually liked from that whole universe part, or whatever they're calling it now.
The worlds of DC.
Whatever. And especially after watching him in Mission Impossible Fallout, like.
So good.
Got robbed.
But anyway, yeah. I mean, Superman's everywhere. In the same way that Spider-Man is the tentpole for Marvel, Superman's the tentpole for DC. In fact, Superman's the tentpole for almost every single hero out there. Without Superman, you really don't get everything else. Superman is what makes everything viable. And it's one of the reasons why he's so ingrained in our consciousness as comic book fans. Like, I haven't read hardly any Superman, but I feel like I know his story because I've watched him through the years on television. I've listened to people talk about him. And yeah, I mean,
I think they were made for Kosovo, but there were these PSA comics printed in the 90s that had Superman telling kids about active landmines. Because there were all these kids getting injured. But it's literally like they found he was such a well-known figure that in some of these places that were like war-torn and were kind of disconnected from society for a period of time, these kids were so saturated with pop culture still that they would listen to Superman. They didn't entirely understand that Superman didn't exist. And that's like, it's heartbreaking that like they kind of thought Superman was real.
That's really heartbreaking.
It totally is. But you'd also just think about like, that's just true of little kids in general. Like at a certain age, you know, they don't make that separation. And just thinking how much he saturated our society that like, that was, who's the best person to deliver this message? They asked, you know, Warner Brothers, and Superman was the person that they thought kids would trust. You know, if a kid knows who Superman is, then they think that he's out to help them and he's out to help everybody. And that's like kind of a beautiful message.
Yeah, and it really is. And I mean, I think that's something that resonated with our, but we, so every episode, most episodes, we ask for fan but why those. So why did this topic matter to people? So going into the fan but why those for Superman, this is from @PilotsandPetards. And he says, I'll repost this panel, but it took me a long time to get Superman. And mostly he matters because it's not about his powers. It's all about his action and need to effect positive change. I think if you look at Superman through that lens, it's not corny. It's aspirational. And he used the panel from Morrison and Quietly with Reagan, which we've talked about now 3 times in this episode, which shows you just that power that, you know, he has. Also from @GamingDaddio, you can listen to him on our stack of episode. Man, everybody responds to us. Oh, actually, should I just read this entire conversation that happened?
No, because I thought we were going to have this conversation, but we never did.
What
he's talking about now.
Yeah. Okay. So essentially, at Gaming Daddy responds, his humanity, compassion, and love are far stronger than his superpowers. The ability to affect others positively through their actions are far stronger than just being able to lift a lot of weight. And then ultimately, we did, in our Captain America episode, we had a, we kind of ripped on Superman, which pilots pointed out. He said, agreed, I'm not ripping on But Why Though PC, but during their Captain America episode, they kind of ripped on his character, Cap, for being too altruistic. Like, that's not real life. But I feel like a bunch of teachers, firefighters, social workers, and counselors would disagree. I think Superman gets dinged for similar reasons, but I think it's because we kind of live in a more cynical age, and it's hard to express optimistic and altruistic sentiments without seeming dumb or naive. I think it's very cool. Superman is an enduring symbol of positive social change through inspiration and action. So next, from at JD Hall 0116, he says, Superman is about being the impossible in the face of everyone telling you it's impossible. He is the candle of hope in the dark. As Clark Kent, he is a crusader for truth. A Superman, he is a force for justice. And much like Cap, the American way he represents is for everyone. And then he included a panel of Superman with a giant Superman shield holding a kid. From at Lanisha. She's actually my co-host on Did You Have To? She says, I've always loved his story and his morality. He's an illegal alien, which I think contributes to the fact that he doesn't only protect America, but what he does his best to protect all of humanity. Oh, also the one scene between him and Darkseid in the final episode of Justice League Unlimited, where he's not holding back his power anymore, and we realized he's been holding it back this whole time. It really shows the amount of restraint and constant awareness he has for his power. From at Gatsu083, Charles, he's one of our patrons. Thank you for the support. Superman matters because he's a symbol of hope that someone can be more than they appear. You can be a simple farm boy from Kansas in a world-saving hero. And a world-saving hero.
I still find it hilarious, not really necessarily hilarious, but the fact that, like, we don't talk about, like, people growing up in Kansas.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just think that's, like, out of all the things that happens, like, he picked in a family from Kansas. And if you've ever been,
like,
Kansas,
middle of nowhere?
Yeah, like, with nothing around it. And just, like, what he ends up either being or whatnot, or what could he have been, and then the type of people that are actually in Kansas and everything else. It's just, it's weird.
It's also just interesting that that's what they picked when, yeah, you know, they'd one had only lived in Cleveland his whole life, and the other had lived in Toronto and then Cleveland. They're both, you know, metropolitan areas, and they're like, yeah, the middle of nowhere in Kansas with farmers. Like, it's it's a choice that's interesting because it has nothing to do with their lives at, yep, all.
Oh, yeah. From at MVD417, despite the fact he's basically an alien demigod, Superman sees himself as a human being. He's just a guy trying to do the right thing. This, plus the immigrant allegories, make Superman one of the most relatable superheroes. From at Nico the Aurora, who is
one of our lovely bloggers,
I could never really identify myself with him, nor would I consider myself the biggest Superman fan. But watching the animated adaptation, Superman Doomsday, that premiered on Cartoon Network, and it left me wanting more. He's the reason I became interested in superheroes. From at Swar Seawalker, Superman represents to me wonder and joy in the pursuit of doing the right thing. In the 1978 film with Christopher Reeves and Margot Kidder's performances and John Williams' rousing score, we have this in its core form. It's purely uplifting. And I do want to say to you, like, this episode, because it's easily been 3 hours long, and I think the Superman movies with Christopher Reeves probably deserve their own episode, because it is a very specific version of Superman, and that did a very specific thing for superhero movies. So I didn't forget them. There just isn't all the time in the world. from at LOT Fans Mom, Superman matters especially now because he is a refugee who believes in the real American dream of equality for all. He stands for truth and justice. Go ahead and tell him that his alter ego is an enemy of the people. I dare ya. That's pretty much it. If I missed any, I apologize. But yeah, I mean, I think ultimately just what I'm walking away with, and I guess I understood I guess technically it's the Snyderverse now, because they're making it all different, but like the S stands for hope, like specifically, like that's what it means in Kryptonian or something.
Well, I think it's that in many versions, L, his last name,
yeah,
Kal-El, means hope, and it's the sigil
of the house of L. So okay,
It works either way, I think.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And that's another interesting thing, like, because we mentioned before we started recording, I mentioned how I always like that it does draw on, I think, their Jewish heritage, because even though Richard Donner, when he made the films, tried to, I think, kind of make it to what he saw as a Christ metaphor, because there's a lot of that as well. I think he missed the fact that it's kind of a Moses allegory, where instead of being in a basket on a river, he's, you know, sent through the stars. But at the same time, as well, his last name is Hebrew, I think, for light. So it's like there's some there's some of that culture there in his DNA from the very beginning.
Ooh. Yeah, no, I mean, that's really important, and it's also really integral to the character. I mean, whenever we do a Jack Kirby episode, we'll see that in his characters as well, like that special piece of him that he puts in there. And yeah, I mean, ultimately, like, Superman stands for hope. I feel a lot more, I guess, like when I was doing my research, and just to close it out with my final thoughts, I want to know more about the original Superman, so pre-God Superman. I wish I had learned more about him. Because I do want to know more about what he fought then and what he fought now. And then I do want to read Kingdom Come, and I do want to get a better I'm leaving this episode wanting to get a better understanding of the character and how he connects, like, specifically like the people who gave us, but why those and stuff, how he connects to them. Because he's just a character I've never been able to connect to, right? Like, I've always found myself in the X-Men and stuff like that. But I'm definitely interested in finding more out. Final thoughts, guys? Adrian?
I don't know. I'm just not a huge Superman fan. I think a lot of it stems from being a big Goku fan, and then just, like, hearing people just talk down on Goku because Superman, I think, is, like, back in, you know, my childhood. But even just, like, learning about his story and stuff, I just don't think it's, not that it's not interesting for some people, it's just not interesting for me. But I think the biggest thing that I do like about Superman, especially, like, in this political climate, and then, like, the kids that I serve in my current high school that I work at, like, the immigrant story is powerful, and I think it's something that I hope gets revisited soon, kind of in, like, the run. You know, So kids who are dreamers, kids who are undocumented immigrants, can see how Superman, you know, fights for humanity and fights for, like, the U.S. and stuff, even though they might hate him. And I think that's powerful for kids today. And I think that's, like, the biggest but why, though, for me, is that the immigrant story. But I also think it's dumb how he can smell good after he's been dead forever.
Yeah, there was a lot of information. It's still interesting to me how Superman started from, like, he could jump to now he's a demigod, as one person put it. It bores me a little bit, because it is one of those now with a lot of these. I know we talked about a lot of his humanity and everything else, and that's great, but just it's kind of like the stories you have to tell to basically make compelling of, like, I guess an actual superhero story and anything, like, you need all these Doomsday and, like, Zod. Even though it's weird that his planet blew up and now every single person is apparently alive from Krypton.
I know, he finds, like, 100 Kryptonians.
But he was only in a spaceship that traveled all the way over there, but somehow they made it here with nothing. There's a lot of, like, stuff like that kind of makes me weird about Superman.
Zod and his, in one iteration, aren't they, like, on a terraforming mission outside of Krypton when Krypton explodes? Or, like...
Probably a lot of them, you know, they're in the Phantom Zone already, so they've already been war criminals who are in out of phase in our dimension. Basically, they're immortal ghosts, like, where they can see our world but can't interact with it at all, but can be accessed with dimensional travel, because comics.
Yeah, which I guess is kind of what always throws me off with him, because we have, like, that, and then we just start adding the thing. We end up with the dog.
Don't you dare slander Krypto.
I'm not slandering Krypto.
That was a great cartoon.
The whole, like, as I said before, like, there's a lot of, like, physics and stuff that goes involved with, like, what he does. That's kind of hard to understand for me.
It's like Spider-Man breaking Gwen Stacy's neck type things.
Well,
but yeah. Well, and that's, I always think Superman has such impossible levels of control that he has his super breath means he can either make it hot or ice cold. He can freeze things with his breath. It's like I can't make my breath cold. Like, no matter how hard I concentrate, like, it's like, there's no, what? Like, that's insane, dude. Like, so if he can, and I guess the principle they're thinking of is like, oh, well, you're cooling your warm soup. You know, it's like, it's sure. The same. What? Again, this is what happens when teenagers make the most influential superhero of all time. Yep. But you're absolutely right. But like, the physics of it are problematic at best. Like, but I just figure he has to be always careful all the time. And that was part of, I think, the Richard Donner version, who's not quite as powerful as the comic version for the most part, but then can also make the world go back in time by spinning it around. So best not think about that, I guess. But I think part of that idea was that when he would bump into stuff, it would be him actually kind of relaxing a little bit as Clark and just not really paying attention. So people would think he was clumsy, but it's because he was this superpowered person in our world. It's like his coffee cup breaks, but it's not because he's a klutz. It's because he's too strong to touch anything. And it doesn't quite answer it to any sort of logical satisfaction, but it works okay for me. Like,
besides the physics part and stuff, that it's hard for me to grasp, but it's hard for pretty much anybody to grasp because it's beyond, like, you know, I guess people, even though he somehow looks exactly like us, functions and has DNA and everything else. To be fair, like with the Captain America episode, we did not talk about it as much in this one, but my moral compass is not as high as his. And so a lot of that stuff is probably hard for me to see into grasp or even relate
altruism.
To.
Altruism.
Yeah. I don't know if we want to go into the whole thing of the guy who
tried to... That's a whole nother episode.
The guy who tried to...
Actually, if you want to hear about that, you can go to our Captain America episode.
I can see why he's basically part and why people love him and whatnot, but it's just... Some of those components really just unfortunately do not meet well with me or how I perceive or analyze things.
I think it also just depends like what people want from a superhero, right? Like, do people want a superhero that they see themselves in and has their struggles, or do they want in a superhero somebody that they want to be?
Yeah, he's more aspirational than he's like reflective, I think.
Exactly.
Which is also why we lead into basically we bring on people like Jared. And he can give his lovely final thoughts on how much he loves
final thoughts.
Superman.
Well, I guess the only thing that I haven't touched on that I think is kind of cool about him as a character is that he is allowed to evolve. Like, you know, a lot of other characters, they always get reset. I mean, God, I barely touched on it, but Spider-Man literally had the devil was like, I want your marriage.
Yeah.
I'm gonna make a deal with your wife to save your octogenarian aunt from dying from like the seventh time she's almost died or whatever. Like the lengths with which they'll go to reset characters back to where they started is pretty huge in comics. And, you know, with all the retcons and everything at the same time, Superman has kind of endured and in 2011 with the New 52, they tried to undo him and Lois. They tried to make him date Wonder Woman.
That was so bad. I hate that.
The fans, because it's so dumb, because it's like, that's literally, it's a fine thing to talk about with his fans or whatever, but it's the littlest kid, like most basic response, like Superman and Wonder Woman should date. It's like, no, they shouldn't. Like, that's dumb.
That's one of those moments where they heard the Mallrats conversation and were like, this is logical.
Yeah, or like assuming that like Bruce Wayne and Tony Stark would be the best of friends because they're both billionaires or whatever.
Oh, it's
like,
they would hate each other. Exactly.
Like he would not be able to stand Tony for 5 seconds and Tony would just think he was the most boring buzzkill he'd ever met. Like they would not get along.
They are both billionaire playboys, but in very different ways.
Exactly. Like, you know, Tony is the thing that he pretends to be. But like, it's the same basic logic, I think. And even though there have been attempts to make Superman a certain way, like, I think that they will kind of let him evolve. You know, at this point, he's got a wife and a kid. And they won't let – even though, you know, Damian exists – They've retconned that where it's like, oh, he was in a birthing chamber as well.
Yeah.
Because Batman can't have a 13-year-old son because that would mean he can't be 25. It's like he's like, come on.
Batman's finally going to get married to Catwoman? Nope.
Yeah, psych. Like, he can never be happy. And it was the same way. Like, they go back and hit the reset button a lot. But Superman has gone from the guy who he was to a guy who does have family now and found family and he's gotten married and had a kid. And it's like, he's actually been allowed to grow as a character, even though he is cheesy. And even though he is, you know, kind of, I think from an old fashioned, you know, era, at the same time, he gets to grow a little bit. And I think that's cool.
But as you said too, he also comes from like almost like the most perfect life, or he grew up with like a great family.
Yeah. Oh, well, that is true though, because like, what are they resetting back to zero? They're resetting back his great family.
Well, he did have a great family life growing up, but pre-crisis until 1987, he was an orphan on Earth as well. They passed away before he became Superman when he was a young man. And then in the movie, his dad had died, and then post-crisis, they killed Pa before they reset everything. Although now I think they're both alive again. I hope so. That was always my favorite part.
They're both alive.
That's my favorite part of Lois and Clark, was him getting to go home and talk to his parents. His parents were probably my favorite part. Like, they were just awesome. And and that might be why I do relate to him. Like, you bring that up, Matt. Like that might be why I relate to him as much as I do, because like, I remember listening to a friend's Star Wars podcast like a couple of years ago, and they were like, everybody has father issues. Like, everyone in the world, you know, when they were a teenager, you know, had some phase where they fought with their dads. Like, I don't know anyone who doesn't. And that's why we can all relate to Luke Skywalker and the reveal in Empire Strikes Back. And I was like, yeah, I must be the one exception. Like, I've never butted heads with my dad ever. And like, I guess that's Superman and John Kent. Like, I guess that's the same thing. Clark, he never hated his dad.
So Jared, would you kill the Green Arrow for injuring your father?
Oh, no, certainly not.
But would you let him die in a tornado?
No, I didn't love that part. That podcast change as well. But I would probably do the Dark Knight Returns thing. I just cut off his bow pulling arm. He's going to be able to do much with that without that. So.
Well, thank you so much for being on. Seriously, this has been a great conversation. There's probably more we can talk about. There's probably a lot we missed. If we missed anything big that you want us to cover in the future, remember, we are doing revisit episodes now. So let us know. We can cover it later on. So Jared, why don't you tell everybody all of your links and @s and where they can find you?
People can find me on Twitter and I guess Instagram at I Snow Nothing, like I Know Nothing, Jon Snow, but with no G at the end. It's it makes sense when you read it. if you know Game of Thrones. If you don't, it's just gibberish. And you can also be found at my Star Wars podcast at podcast2187 on Twitter and on places where people can find podcasts. And you can find Jess and I on iTunes or here at the But Why Though podcast community on Project Tahiti, which is also on Twitter at Project Tahiti.
So as always, you can find the podcast at But Why Though PC on Twitter. It's where we're most active. You can find our podcast community and all of our articles and updates and everything like that at butwhythoughpodcast.com. You can find me at Oh My Myth Randir on Twitter. Adrian?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperEase93, SuperEase93.
Matt?
You can find me in a pocket dimension.